Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And you just missed the most absolutely beautiful, gorgeous sunset that just went down beyond the horizon here of the Texas Medical Center. And it was beautiful. I took a few pictures. I was like, wow, what a awesome day we are experiencing here in Houston, Texas. And I'm so excited and ready for spring. We don't want to have any more of that cold weather. But it's just beautiful to be here. We appreciate you all joining us tonight. We have an unbelievable show. And, you know, we always have good guests, but every now and then there's one or two that come along. It's like, oh, I can't wait. Tonight is one of those programs. I could not wait to get 8 o'clock to come around here Central Time in Houston, just so I could personally meet and see my friend from California, Forrest Lang, our guest tonight, and never met him, but we have talked on the phone many a time, and I consider him just a good friend. We want you to get involved. This is going to be a raw show, a real show, because I don't believe there's any way to be able to handle truth and authenticity and genuineness without being true and authentic. So many times we try to candy coat our life and let it be easily swallowable that I can just get it down, when sometimes life isn't that way. Sometimes it's hurtful. It's traumatic. It's real. And the pain is real. And you're going to hear some stuff tonight that is just totally fascinating. So I'm anxious about that. You will not want to miss it. So I really want you to encourage right now, just get on your cell phones and text a few people or email them real quick, or call them and say, hey, you want to make sure you watch the show tonight. And I can't wait to get to this program. Next week is another one of those programs that I just can't wait to get to. We're going to have David Ring with us next week. And you may not recognize the name, but he is an evangelist and a singer. And he runs around in the crowd and the group with Bill and Gloria Gaither in the homecoming singer and the gospel singing and all of that. And you said, okay, what are we doing having him on? Well, he has cerebral palsy, and how he is able to still do what he's been intended and called to do in life, even with what we consider a handicap. But he's got a different view of that. And we're going to talk to him, David Ring, next Sunday night here. And then April programs are just off the wall with wonderful guests. And we'll tell you more about those next week. But tonight, if you want to get involved in the conversation, I know you may. We'd love to have calls and comments. You can give right. I got Facebook right here off to the side on my iPad. My son Curtis is running that. Curtis is going to join us tonight because of the guest. And we had lunch today. And I want to tell you, Curtis and I had a heart-to-heart talk today at lunch. And I just couldn't love a young man more than I do Curtis. Just unbelievable. He is just one of my pillars in life. And we just had a great talk. And I asked him if he wanted to be on the program and kind of just watch and jump in with questions or two. And he said he'd love to. And he's had a little bit of internet problems, but he's going to be with us a little bit shortly, hopefully. But if you want to get involved, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. We would love to have you comment, call with a question or just a thought, or you can get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page and interact with us now directly. There's people already commenting. So you got people doing a shout out to you for us right here on our page. Chris is saying howdy do to you and shouting out to you. So that's great. So just keep on doing that. And I just can't tell you enough of this young man that I have ran across, and we connected, and we may talk about how we connected. But Forrest Lang has a story to tell. He grew up and just listened to all of these things in life, in poverty, in abuse, in addiction, in foster care, in homelessness. He joined up in the Navy as a hospital corpsman at age 18 and served honorably our country for 5 years during peacetime. After that, he came back and I think to San Diego, went to community college, studying illustration. And you would not believe some of the artwork that's behind him right now. And I believe he's the one that did it, but he's a accomplished tattoo artist. As a matter of fact, he gave me permission to use one of these pictures in my upcoming book for the youth, which I'm so excited about. And then all of a sudden in this life, he also was acquitted in a murder trial for accidentally killing his best friend. After which, Forrest reenlisted and was deployed to Iraq, serving as a line corpsman in the 1st Marine Division. If you know anything about that, you can know, I don't think we can even fathom the trauma that was involved in that. After one combat deployment, Forrest returned back to San Diego, where he became a tattoo artist for the last 16 years. And the thing that I love about this is in 2015, he founded, and we're going to talk about this, Sparta 12-Step, a mediation suicide prevention group for veterans and first responders. And he is the author of a book that I've read, and this afternoon I reread, Angel Blue. Unbelievable. It will change your life. It's a memoir about recovery from severe mental, spiritual, and emotional trauma. And he lives in La Jolla, California, with his fiance, Kristen, and daughter, a beautiful young lady, a daughter, Grace. So it is my pleasure tonight to welcome to you, all the way from the wonderful state of California, Forrest Lang. Forrest, are you with us? Can you hear me?
How you doing, Doc?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
Good to see you face to face.
Well, it is awesome. And I'm being serious as a heart attack. I really feel like we are friends. I mean, I just love this that we connected and we chat quite a bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you are, you're the first person that I've come across. Maybe there are other men that wrote about, you know, recovery from, you know, the early childhood stuff. And I really connected when I read your book. I sat down and read it all at once. And then immediately when I was done, I got on your website and called you. So it's kind of, I felt like I knew you after reading that. And there were just so many similarities in the after effects of what being molested as a kid does to a person. And then to see another man being open and talking about recovery, you know, because that's a hard one to get past. I'm not supposed to be alive, and neither are you, let alone thriving. And I don't take any credit for it. It's because of people like you, people who were willing to share and be authentic and reach out and be of service. And, you know, I'm grateful to be here. I'm a little nervous, but
no, you're going to do fine. And first of all, I want to just say thank you for your service to the country. in the two cores and the two signups and everything that you had to endure. I just want to say thank you and salute to you for all of that. My son is in the Army, and my other son did his stint in the Army too. And I just want to thank you for that service.
Thank you for your support.
You know, I think immediately when we connected.
Well, I was just going to say.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say thank you for your support, Doc, and it's a great honor that I was able to serve. And in no way do I feel anything other than positive about that decision, about that time in my life and the things it gave me. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's great. I'm being told I need to turn my microphone up, but I may have let me just turn it up a little bit. I won't be overpowering, but I want to make sure people can hear both of us. I hope that's better. But, you know, when you called and I answered, and I always answer when I can, but we answered, we immediately, there was no hesitation. We just jumped in like we knew each other for years and just started sharing. So Forrest, with all the stuff, you know, on your bio and after reading the book, the overwhelming amount of trauma that you experienced in your life, have you recovered, or is that just a process and a stage we go through? So if I just said, hey, are you okay? You know, because I'm not, but I just want to know how do you process where you are at in that recovery of all the things that we talked about just in the intro?
Well, I experience pain. Yes. Still have nightmares. Yes. I am recovering. And I don't know if there is ever some end goal black belt in recovery spot to get to. But recovery for me is like a pool of water, right? My spirit's like a pool of water, and water flows in and out, and there's a lot of junk on the bottom of my pool. So if I shut that water off, I can get stagnant and toxic. So for me, recovery is just a part of life. Wow. And I want to enjoy my life, and I want to leave a good imprint on this earth when I'm gone. And I have the opportunity and the power to do that. So why wouldn't I? You know, I think a lot of the stuff when a kid's power is taken away and their innocence is robbed, sometimes we just go through life thinking that we have no power and that we are just a victim. And it's taken many years for me to get to a point where I don't feel like a victim anymore, if that's what you mean. I'm a victor. Yeah. But there's still trauma that lives in my body. I still have my struggles. Yeah. I mean, I don't ever want to pretend to be perfect.
When you wrote the book, did that help your healing when you poured it all out and put it on paper?
I don't know yet. If a person has a broken bone and it's healed wrong and you re-break that bone and set it, probably going to hurt for a while. So I just finished my last round of edits a couple months ago. And every time it's been very painful. I believe that I've learned a lot more about myself and about the work that I get to do. And it hurt. It hurt writing that book, but I didn't do it for me. So that's okay. You know, I didn't do it to recover. I did it to show somebody like me. I wrote that book to me. I wrote it to me when I was 15, when I was 16, living on the streets, yeah. No hope. And I just thought that everything in the world was against me and there was no point in living. And, you know, all these bad things were just going to keep happening to me. I wrote it to me, you know, in hopes that maybe some kid in juvenile hall or some kid in a foster home or some adult who hasn't had a chance to process can pick it up and look at it and say, hey, here's a guy who's had the same things happen. Here's a person who's had the same things happen. And here's how they have a good life anyways, because I win, not them.
Yeah. You know, you're writing. You can write. And the thing I love about the way you write is I can tell that you don't try to imitate anybody else's writing. And it's like we're having a conversation writing. And I love that type of writing. That right in the middle of a sentence, you'll say the emotion that either you felt at the time or that you're feeling right now as you're writing. And it just kind of blurts out. And it's like, whoa. But I love that because you know there's feeling and emotion in this, that you're just not telling a story. You're living it again and sharing it with the people that are reading it. And Forrest, I don't think there's anything, at least in my world, more powerful than sharing the stuff that almost destroyed us, but now is going to give us the strength to keep on keeping on and give that to other people to help them keep on keeping on. Your book's going to be used in a wonderful way by a lot of people.
I hope so. Would have rather
open and it comes out, Forrest.
Well, it depends how long it takes me to get an agent. You know, I'm on my my 16th rejection, and that's okay. You know, yes. I'm plodding along and doing whatever it needs to do to get that book where my heart feels it should go. It's been a strange journey and process. I never thought I'd be an author. I thought I was just going to do tattoos and do my stuff. And I felt that the book was an assignment, and I'm just working to complete the assignment.
Yeah. You know, I got immediately, I don't even know how, immediately picked up by a major publisher. And then when it started getting close to the edits, and they were starting to read it and really look at it and started, they wanted to change it all. And I pulled back in how hard that was to be excited that I was being offered a publishing contract by a huge publisher. And then they wanted me to change the story. And it's like, no. And that may be half of the battle that you're going to deal with, because real raw story, sometimes it takes the right people that'll take that and embrace it and go, wait, this is a story that has to be told. And I think your story is perfect for the time.
I think we know where people are going to be more receptive to, instead of trying to change, a rock and roll song into a bluegrass song, I feel like they're going to want to make it a better rock and roll song. And so far, every no, every restructure, every criticism has made me sharper and stronger. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with, as long as, you know, it wouldn't be a ridiculous change, like, you know, taking out components of recovery. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in people still. I've developed a lot more faith in people. And I think that whatever way it goes, it's gonna work out. I feel like it's already done in some ways, you know?
Well, it was an honor for me to read it before it was published. And anything that I can do to help with any of it, you let me know. And, man, I am in your corner, because it's a powerful piece of work. Is there anything, Forrest? And you have no idea what we're going to talk about tonight, do you? I mean, we didn't.
No.
You have no idea. And most of the time, I don't either. I just go, I read the book before, and then we just go. Is there anything that you didn't tell us, that you didn't put in the book, because you're not ready to unlock that closet?
There's some stuff I'm not sure about, because it's so life. I have flashes of some really ugly things happening before the age of 4, but I wasn't really sure 100%. And so the most important thing to me with that book is that I told the truth.
Yes.
The truth, right? And there were some things where I had to kind of string them together to make them make more sense, because, you know, there's stuff that's just not relevant, right? but I wanted to make sure that everything was accurate. And no, there's no big secret or big, no.
Okay, good, good. There were some closets that I didn't open up, and it took me a while because I think I was afraid that people would embrace this in a different way and then I would become unacceptable to them. So I kept some things back that I now have just now put on paper for the book that's coming out soon that are the closets that I never thought I would open. And I think that's going to provide that extra dose of healing that I need because everything's going to be out.
I will say one thing. I am a free man, and it's so awesome to be a free man with no secrets.
Wow, that's powerful.
And I've never been that way. I was terrified and paranoid about everything for so many years. And, you know, I was afraid if people knew that I had bad voices in my head, they would lock me up in an insane asylum. I was afraid that if people knew that I got molested, they would reject me and I'd never be able to have a relationship. I was afraid that if people knew I was poor, they would make fun of me. Like all these things that I had so much fear about. And, you know, stepping out and writing this book, of course, it's intimidating. It's intimidating to, but I've had enough interaction with speaking and, you know, enough people read that. And I've had enough positive interactions with people in life that I figured out I'm a likable guy. And that's all right.
Well, the best way to overcome fear is truth. And you are free now because it's exactly right. I mean, truth's going to set you free. And it has that in your life. We're going to take our first commercial break. On the other side of this, I'm going to bring my son in too, so he can jump in if he wants to and have questions or want to get involved in the conversation. But Forrest, I want to start a discussion about the accident and how that impacted you, because you, right out of the starting gate, that's the way the book starts. And I don't want to let all the cats out of the bag, but I want to talk about that just briefly because that had to impact you in an unbelievable way. And we're going to talk about that just on the other side of our first commercial break. Call us if you want to be involved at 888-627-6008. You will not want to miss the next 35 minutes of this program. Be right back after this break.
Are you still there, Doc?
Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. All right. Welcome back. We have Forrest Lane from California with us tonight, an author of an upcoming book that's going to be published hopefully soon called Blue Angel. And Curtis is with us too tonight, my son. Angel Blue. I'm sorry. I always want to say Blue Angel. Angel Blue. Thanks for correcting me on that, Forrest. Tell me, Forrest, because I want to make sure we get to the help. To the recovery stage, so we don't want to always open up wounds and talk about, but I don't want to just skim over it either. the vividness of your writing with this accidental shooting. Can you just put me there for a few moments and their listeners that know nothing about your story yet of what happened during that one incident in your life that literally changed everything in your life?
On April 17th of 2001, I went out with my good friend and mentor, Thomas Ogden, and I made a decision, a not smart decision, to play with a gun. And the gun malfunctioned and acted unloaded. I broke a cardinal safety rule and jokingly pointed the gun at my friend and pulled the trigger. And my life changed completely. That incident will be a, it is, has been a imprint on my spirit that's very painful. And it was the most difficult part to write, and that's why I did it first. I also wanted to get my readers' attention.
You did.
And I believe that it is possible to take responsibility without assigning blame and without taking revenge. So it still is a very painful topic to when I got to that part in the book, each time I relived it so vividly that I screamed. I used to have screaming flashbacks. But I think that what is very important, and the reason it's very important to tell that story, is because there's others who have gone through something similar who may not have hope.
Mm.
I'm very sad, and I do I have regret. I regret that that happened, but I also forgive myself today. And that was a very long road.
You were immediately arrested, were you not?
Yes.
And then you went through the trial.
I went to jail, and not only that, I had just gotten sober in 12-step recovery, and I've stayed sober since then. But I had been very lonely and alone, and I had just been welcomed in by this group of people, and then I caused this horrific accident. So not only was my friend dead, it was my fault. Then I already, on top of that, I had blame and shame thrown my way. You know, people were upset and they were hurting, and we all know that hurt people hurt people. And then I was, on top of that, which was the least of my concern at the time, I was looking at doing 35 years to life in the California state prison system, which I really wasn't concerned with at the time. But in hindsight, that's a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were other plans for my life. My destiny was elsewhere. And after I was acquitted, I just wanted to die, but I did not want to take in drugs or alcohol because I felt that would dishonor my mentor and my friend. And I didn't want to be remembered as the guy who committed suicide or the guy who accidentally killed his best friend. So I went back into the Navy because I wanted to be remembered as the guy who died in Iraq in combat saving somebody.
Was you hoping you would die on the battlefield?
I was.
That's powerful. So when you came back still alive, was you disappointed? Or was you saying, hey, I have a second chance?
I figured out I wanted to live there, and I found tattooing. I started tattooing my brothers in Lima Company in Iraq, which is unheard of for the military. I mean, that's just, it's completely against the rules on so many different levels. But we got away with it because my unit was good old boy reservists from East Tennessee, and I love those guys, man. They're just the best. So when I was over there, it wasn't what I thought it would be. I thought war would be like Saving Private Ryan, where there was just, you know, or Forrest Gump, where there's just stuff happening all the time. And really, my experience, and everybody has their own war, you know, everybody who went, they have their own experience. But my experience was months of boredom, followed by 30 seconds of excitement, followed by discharge of emotion afterwards, and constant fear and tension, because we never knew who was going to be out to get us and who was going to be our friend. We never knew what we were going to drive over. It was more of like a constant tension type of war without a lot of discharge. And I was walking and thinking, and I had been reading some 12-step literature, and I asked the universe what my purpose was in career. I knew I didn't want to go to art school anymore. And it wasn't my idea to start tattooing. It was somebody else's idea, but that answer came very quickly. And I dove right in to that career. There were a few things that really helped me with forgiveness of myself and others. One was figuring out that forgiving is not love. Forgiving is not friendship. Forgiving is not reconciliation. Forgiving is clearing resentment and abandoning revenge, right?
Wow.
So for me to forgive myself, I don't even have to like myself to forgive myself, right? That's something entirely different, like apples and oranges. The way I forgive myself is I discontinue punishing myself and I clear my resentment at myself. I take responsibility without blame. Now, with somebody like my foster mother, who was a pedophile, who molested, tortured, and tried to kill me when I was a kid, I will not, she's passed now, but I will not seek revenge on her, and I will clear any resentment that I have, so I forgive her. It doesn't mean that I would want anything good for her, or, you know, there's a cutting of the cord. For my brother, who molested me from 4 to 9, I don't want to be his friend. I don't want to see him. I don't love him. I don't feel anything for him, but I also forgive him. I abandon revenge. So I think what makes it so hard for people who got molested to wrap their mind around forgiveness is that they think it means something that it doesn't.
Well, that's an interesting angle to come in at forgiveness. And I have never used forgiveness as the definition of abandoning revenge. Interesting. That's powerful to a lot of people that's listening tonight.
I'm going to jump in real quickly, if you don't mind.
No, please.
So a few minutes ago, and this question did come in, but I had it too. So a few minutes ago, you said you had a support group. Who was your support group?
At what time?
You said a few minutes ago that you didn't want to let your support group down. So I don't know what support group we were talking at that point, but who were your support group? So if you had multiple, who were they?
I've had many, many support groups over time. I couldn't see them early on. I did not know that the licensed clinical social worker who came over to my house when he didn't need to anymore was my support group. I didn't know that the first people I met in recovery were my support group. I didn't know that the recruit drill instructors that taught me how to brush my teeth for the first time in the Navy when I went to boot camp, I had never learned how to brush my teeth. I didn't know they were my support group. So yes, I did. But as I progressed further in life and gotten a little older and a little more clear, I get to choose my support group. And I get to choose the people that I want around me. I want to be around people who lift me up and who I lift them up. I don't want to be around people who are doing things that I don't want to do, or part of things that I don't want to be a part of, or people who violate my boundaries and tear me down. I mean, you know, one of the great things about not having a family is I get to choose mine, you know?
Wow.
So. I like that. Great answer, by the way. Great answer. I love whoever you need, you have, correct. So I love that. This one may be a little bit more difficult. This one is straight from my heart. So it's going to be a two-part question, depending on how you answer. Did you ask for help while you were in the military?
No, I didn't, but they helped me anyways.
Awesome.
I had a flashback while I was working in a ward. I was 20 years old, and I had tried to hide. I thought that my past was disgusting and that the military wouldn't want me anymore if they knew about what happened to me, about that I had been a homeless teenager drinking every day, that I'd been raped by a boy 3 years older than me. I thought they would think I was gay, kick me out. I thought that they would think I was mentally unfit if they knew that I had been molested. And so I created a persona of Hospitalman Forrest Lang, who was just a tough guy who worked out in the gym all the time, who had no emotions and who was just fitting in and trying to be like other people. And I had a breakdown when a nurse asked me to administer a suppository. I couldn't do it. And I hid in a room. And Lieutenant Ski, she was a hardcore lady, man. I mean, she's married to a Marine. And, you know, I even reached out to her on Facebook. I figured out where she was, and she's still hardcore. She's awesome. And she took a knee next to me, and I was crying on the floor. She said, what's the matter with you? You know, it's okay. You're not in trouble. What's wrong? And I said three words. And she was the first person I told I got molested. And they called a chaplain, and I got into, that was the beginning of my recovery.
Awesome. That's awesome. And I'm so glad that you did get the help that you needed in the military at some point. And again, this is going to be a more difficult question, but I have a lot of my battle buddies listening tonight because I knew this is going to be an impactful story. Now, knowing what you know now compared to what you did back then, would you tell somebody else in the military to get the help they need, knowing that sometimes in the thought you had was it was a bad stigma? So knowing what you know now, what would you say to somebody in your shoes today?
Well, I would first off say that your life is more valuable than any career and any shunning by a command or sometimes, I mean, I want to be transparent, man. There's piss poor leadership sometimes where people are not allowed to go seek help, but there's always a way, right? When I was afraid, you know, there were times when I had a command where they were, you know, they call you a sick call commando if you had a counselor or something. I went outside and I went to the YMCA and I got counseling there. There's always a way, you know, I'm here. If one of the guys is struck, give me a call. You know, there's plenty of outside resources. If you're afraid of your command, because you feel they're going to put you down or do whatever, you can go up, you can go somewhere else. You know, the military is a war machine. That whole thing is not, it's not about your feelings. You know what I mean? There at the end of the day, do we win the war or do we not win the war? but most times, you know, we're in my view, from what I've seen, I haven't been in the Navy in a long time, you know, I've been volunteering. It seems like a lot of, I don't know the right way to say it, you know, to encompass every military branch, but the leadership is getting better about recognizing mental health as an important component of overall health.
Yes, sir. You're, Forrest, I haven't talked to you very much, but I can tell you right now, you're inspiration, brother. The people listening tonight that I know are listening, they're going to be talking to me tomorrow because of what you just said. So you are an inspiration, brother. Thank you for those awesome words. I'm going to leave you alone for now, but thank you.
I tell you what, Forrest, I think it's wonderful. There's no doubt in my mind that when you told me the other day on the phone, you had my back. If I ever needed anything, I had access to call you. I believe that because I have a feeling that loyalty in your world really means something. Is that right?
It does. I expect it of everybody though, but my own personal loyalty and my personal integrity, mine means a lot, you know, and the way I measure that is if a person does what they say they're going to do, right? If you're not going to do it, don't say it.
Right.
Can I add on one thing, the whole inspiration for writing that book, since we were talking about the military aspect of it.
Sure.
As I volunteered more and more with Save a Warrior and the Sparta Project, 5-day initiatory processes to treat PTSD that work really well, not for everybody, not every treatment works for everybody, but I've seen massive success in that arena of mental health treatment. The more I went and the more I interacted with other warriors, the more I realized and the more I interacted with gangbangers on the other side and cops and firefighters and people who go into these service jobs or warrior cultures, the more I noticed that 9 out of 10 of them had been molested. 9 out of 10 of them had been beat up as kids. It blew my mind. It blew my mind how many people in those positions, how many of our warriors had experiences like that, who had, you know, now we have the ACE score that we can measure those things on, an ACE score above 5. I mean, and I knew I had to say something, because it was like, for me personally, I mean, and probably so many of my cohorts around me, we hid everything, stepped into a new life, put on a uniform and learned a new language and tried to forget it all. And it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work. You know, you can't put a rotten apple in a new bag and hope that the bag's going to be okay. Got to get rid of that rotten apple.
Wow, that's good stuff. I tell you what, we're going to take our last break. And I tell you what, we're going to jump in on that ACEs part of it and how you dealt with that. And I want to get your opinion of what you think about what statistics claim is happening in our world with men, and see what your opinion of that is before we go into what you do now to be able to help people recover from their trauma in the work that you're doing right now. So we'll be talking about that on the other side of our last commercial break. Hang with us right here. If you want to get involved, 888-627-6008. Facebook is absolutely exploding. My texts are just going off. It's just going like this all the time. You're touching hearts tonight, Forrest. I appreciate it. Be right back after this last commercial break.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. We have about all 13 minutes left, and we do have some, our Facebook, and I tell you what, my phone is literally forced going crazy with people that's asking questions and just comments of thank you and appreciate you. And I got a feeling you're going to be part of a huge movement among men. And before we have Curtis come back with some questions and comments that came off Facebook, I want to ask you, you know, statistics right now, and I live in the medical world and where we have to have the scientific knowledge and, you know, the proof and all that. They're saying 1 out of every 6 boys before the age of 18 may have been sexually abused. How accurate do you think that is, Forrest?
That is above my. I will say, experience. I feel that we are drawn toward people with similar experience. We are drawn towards people who have. So in my friend group, way more.
Yeah.
Way. But I don't know. Maybe at the Ivy League schools, or maybe over in Texas in the Baptist. I don't know. You know what I mean? But in my experience, it's more than that. People that
a lot more. I think when, you know, books like ours are out and people have time to let us soak in, I think there's going to be a lot more people rise up and go, hey, wait, I was involved in this. this may be what's going on with me.
There is some kind of over our culture, some kind of over our culture, and it gets to go away. We get to protect those kids. Those kids deserve, it's their fucking right to not be hurt in any way, especially from 0 to 8 when the subconscious is formed, when we create the drivers for them, you know.
Right.
I will do everything in my power to put an end to that.
Wonderful. Tell you what, Curtis, come on back in. I think he has some questions from Facebook. But we want to make sure, Curtis, we have several minutes to allow him to talk about the therapy and the recovery side. Go ahead.
This is from the Art and Soul Dreams Facebook page. We don't have a name, but Art and Soul's Dreams. And the question is, were there similarities to war in your personal past struggles?
The action is the same. If somebody shoots at me, right, like when I got shot at in Oxnard, when I was in a car with someone else and they, you know, people were shooting, the same action happened to my brain as when an IED blew up next to the truck. Now, the intensity might have been different, right? But the action is the same. I think that trauma is trauma. PTSD is PTSD. Some people, especially warriors, can get defensive about that because sometimes we feel like we're not seen. And I feel like the antidote to comparing is seeing each other, right? If we compare, well, you know, yours wasn't as bad or mine wasn't as bad or whatever, instead of doing that, instead of coming at it from that angle, how about we just, you know, that hurts. That hurts, that hurt, and I want you to get better. You know, your the biology of your brain, your spirit, all that stuff is happening, me too. And what do we do about it? How do we recover?
Yeah, that's beautiful for us. That's a beautiful answer. Thank you, brother.
Anything else, Kurt? Okay, we're good. Forrest, take us in now from the masculine side of this. There's not too many voices out there that's talking about being a young man and being abused, going through that trauma. What do you have advice for people that are battling this and have not cracked out of their shell and to say those 3 or 4 words like you said, I was molested. What's your recommendation? How do you?
First off, there's nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong. You are wounded, right? Wounded is not fundamentally flawed. Wounded is wounded. And that it's okay to be yourself throughout your own, because we look at how other people do things, right? And the thing that's tough right now is it's not a popular thing to talk about. Recovery from getting molested as a kid is a cringy thing to talk about. People don't want to hear about that. It's scary it's like looking at a car accident, just hearing somebody talk about that. And it's very painful, but it's also become this humongous elephant in the room in our culture. And it affects every part of our culture, right? Trauma like that, trauma affects the way people do everything. Okay, so we need to deal with it. And it's okay to be a guy and talk about it. Just be yourself, you know? Whatever, like men, it seems like, well, I don't know what women do, but, or masculine versus feminine, because I have feminine traits, but I lean very masculine. We tend to really question everything that we do to make sure that it's honorable and that it's manly enough or fierce enough or whatever. And when dealing with being wounded, it's okay. It is okay to be wounded and need help and not know. And, you know, like there's nothing wrong with you.
Good, good. I tell you what, when we have conferences and start going around the country, I want you to be one of the speakers, because the impact that you have on people is phenomenal. Tell me about, Forrest, what, we only have a few minutes left, what you do with this Sparta 12-step You founded that. What's the purpose of that, and what's the goal, and how's it going?
Me and the guys at Save the Future and make a group for people to go to after Save a Warrior, right? And so we all threw out ideas, and I'm the only original member that still goes and has the meeting. I borrowed a bunch of stuff from other 12-step workshops, and it's just a humble little meeting we do in San Diego. I put it in there. There's a lot of my bio is like, well, you tattooed. And people are like, well, that's cool. You know, it doesn't, I don't go into big depth detail about that. But the Sparta 12-step is very close and near and dear to my heart. It's suffered because of COVID restrictions with meeting and stuff like that. But we go in, we read some literature. We read about how to sit with somebody who's suicidal by Jeff Foster. I have it almost memorized. When you sit with a deeply troubled friend, you are witness to a spiritual crisis, not merely a medical. Understand that your friend's longing for death is really a longing for home, longing for authenticity. And then we read the five pillars of servant leadership. We read a few other pieces of literature, and we meditate for 20 minutes. Now, meditation has been one of the key components, a foundation of my ability to function well in life and to be able to experience love, connection, peace, happiness, fun, sad, all this stuff. So we teach the warrior meditation to the guys, and then we share. A person picks a topic, and you know, in that particular setting, we don't do any war stories. We talk about things like integrity. We talk about things like gratitude. We talk about how we lift each other up, and it works really well. You know, the guys that come, they tend to do better when they show up to that meeting. Once again, it's not something that people are like, oh, I really can't wait to go to the meeting and meditate for 20 minutes. But the guys know that if they show up, I know if I show up, that I feel better after, you know, feel connected.
If there's somebody that's listening, I'm going through what's going on online and my phone. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, Forrest, what would be, are you open to that? How would you want them to be able to contact you if they just want to send you encouragement, or maybe they have a question, or maybe they want to find help?
I don't care.
Okay.
I have an Instagram that I put specifically for the book.
Okay.
Angel Blue Book, right? Because Angel Blue was already taken. So I put my stamp on it. Or they can go to forestlang.com. Now, it's hard to find Forrest Lang because you got to remember to put two R's in Forrest. Or they can find me on Facebook at Angel Blue Book. I try to make it as simple as possible for people to be able to reach out and get a hold of me through this whole thing. And I do my very best to respond to every call, every message, every comment. I really care. I mean, I give a shit. That's why I'm here doing this. I don't need to do this to for any other reason than I care. And right. I want.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I got a feeling you're going to have a lot of people reach out to you. We have about a minute left. Forrest, anything that you want to share before we close out tonight, anything that you have on your mind that you want to make sure is heard in the last 30, 45 seconds?
I just want them to. I want to make it okay to feel what you're feeling. You know, like if you got molested, if you got assaulted, if you grew up in poverty, if you had all these things and people tell you it's not okay to feel like you're feeling, they're wrong. You know, it's okay to feel. Your feelings, you don't control those. You know, we control what we say. We don't control what we think or what we feel. So let's normalize. Let's normalize that stuff, you know? Now, of course, there's like, you know, we don't want to be oversharing out at the bus stop all the time and stuff, but you know what I mean? Take it easy on yourself. Take it easy. You're doing a good job. That's what I want to say.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Forrest, I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you being here. And I know Curtis feels the same way. Curtis, you got any last things before we close out tonight?
It was an honor listening to your story, Forrest. Thank you so much for opening up to us. Love you, brother. I don't know you, but I love you, brother.
I love you too, bro.
Well, Forrest, thank you so much. And we always like to close every program with the same message. No matter what, if your life isn't even a fragment of what Forrest was. If it was just one time, I want to let you know, that's one time too many. And the impact of that trauma can affect you just as much as all of the different traumatic things that Forrest went through, all the things that I went through, the daily abuses. That one trauma, if you don't take care of that, can make that much of an impact on your life and really affect you. Even through ACEs, affect you emotionally and physically. Get help. Don't be afraid to get help. But I always want to let you know, no matter what has happened, as long as there's breath on this side of heaven, there's hope. There's hope. Reach for that hope. Reach out to people like Forrest, like our organization. We're there. We want to be there with you. And we'll grab your hand and help you all we can. But always reach out for hope. Join us right here next week. You will not want to miss David Ring next week, 8 p.m. Central Time, Sunday Night Live from Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. And Forrest, thank you for your message this evening. Unbelievable story. Thank you so much. God bless. Have an awesome week. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.